Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black Arts and Cultural program with African Sisters Media Network. And we are so excited today to be speaking to one of our favorite playwrights, scholars, artists, Ishmael Reed and Carla Blank, who is the director of the latest work, The Shine Challenge 2024, and I think we might have Ishmael and Carla in the studio because I recognize Bay Area numbers.
Yeah, we're here. Yeah, hello, Wanda.
Good.
Hi, Wanda.
Oh, yeah, I see you. I'm glad you're here because I was getting a little worried, but I just want to congratulate you on this wonderful story, which I had not even known, and as usual, you know, we are entertained as well as educated. And Carla, your direction is amazing, absolutely amazing. When I thought reading, you know, I thought people were going to be standing with with little, you know, podiums or sitting down with their scripts. And this is like a play. You know, I can hardly wait to see other iterations of it. So. Let me read your bios real quickly, and then maybe you could tell us a little bit about the Shine Challenge and the Titanic, and what, you know, how this story, you know, became mythologically, you know, grand and great, and wow, it's just amazing, and I totally missed it. So Ishmael Reed, playwright, he also plays Jake the Cat Watson, and he's a pianist in the play. We hear his music. He is author of novels, plays, poetry, and nonfiction, winning honors in all those categories. Backstage called him a modern-day Molière, and The New Yorker called him America's most fearless satirist. And Ishmael, is your website your name?
IshmaelReed.org.
Okay, so Ishmael is
all one word, right?
Right.
Yeah, one word.
Okay.
Dot org.
Okay, super. And Ishmael is spelled I S H M A E L, and then Reed R E E D.
That's right.
Dot org.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Cool. And then Carla Blank is the director, as I already mentioned, and she directed and choreographed Reed's play, The Slave Who Loved Caviar. That was really wonderful. At Theater for the New City, December 2021 and January 2022. And she also directed The Conductor at Theater for the New City in March and again in August through September 2023. And she co-edited the anthology Bigotry on Broadway with Reed. And that's Baraka Books 2021. And what's your website, Carla? For some reason, my printer is not picking up.
It's also print. One word, Carla Blank. It's Carla with a C, ARLABLANK.com.
Okay, super. Excellent. And so first, you know, your cast is phenomenal. Some of the folks I remember from other productions that I've been able to attend, and your videographer is amazing. So I was wondering if you want to give out any shout-outs in the beginning, and then we can talk about the story.
We'll talk about the repertory.
I think I wrote to you, Wanda. I call it Ishmael Reed's pickup company because most of these actors have been working with Ishmael over the years in various productions, and some of them are located in New York, and some of them are located in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that's one of the virtues of doing a virtual reading is that we could have bi-coastal cast because everyone was being recorded from within their own home. And do you want to say something? So our solution to making it to simplifying the background of everybody's individual house was to use backgrounds of a courtroom. It worked very well that Ishmael had chosen to situate this whole discussion in a courtroom because those kinds of backgrounds were easily available online.
Yeah, we are receiving very good reviews in New York. The latest, I don't know whether you have this, Wanda, from the New York Beacon, written by Claythel Benjamin. But if it weren't not for the Sun Reporter, we wouldn't get any coverage on the West Coast. As a matter of fact, I approached one of the two top newspapers, the editor-in-chief, and nothing came of that. So unless it's crime or athletics, we don't get much coverage in the mainstream press out here. So I want to salute the Sun Reporter. As a matter of fact, I did an article about Market Bookstore. If you go to Alta, A-L-T-A, online, Alta Magazine online, you'll see my piece about Blanche Richardson. I called Richardson Dynasty, you know, Ray Richardson, Father Julian. And I mentioned Carlton Goodlett, who has a very, as a matter of fact, he's a historical person. If you look up his biography, he came out of a disaster in his household. And went on to become a medical doctor and the owner of a newspaper, a publisher of a newspaper. It's very, very rare because our opinion space is getting squeezed more and more. So one of the ways I get my message across is to do these plays. So I'm very happy to announce that the African American Museum will be brought presenting this play in April. And we're inviting the audience to attend. I met with them and very progressive people there. And so people say, well, why can't you do something out here? Well, it's difficult to get stuff done out here. I think you have to be like, I know Leonardo da Vinci or somebody to get one of these grants. I know that Mildred Howard and Carla did a profile of Mildred Howard, the great artist. She was turned down by Master's Arts grant, and I was turned down by the California Council of the Arts, and they were supposed to give us comments about why we returned. I never got one. So I think that if it were not from New York, I'd be out of business. Now, let's get to the play. My first encounter. Yeah, go on.
Well, Rome just joined us. Let's welcome him into the conversation.
Hi.
Hey, Rome. Neil, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Listen, I just want to say
I want to give a little background on the play, if that's possible.
Go ahead. Please.
Sure. But let me let everyone know who Rome is first. So Rome, and you can talk about that. Rome actually portrays a polar bear Sam. when he's not on stage, he's a director, actor, and jazz vocalist. He's directed many of Ishmael Reed's plays and his Gospera, Gethsemane Park, at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, again, that's hosting this production, where he is currently chairman of the board. In 2022, Neil received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Adolco Awards 50th Anniversary Celebration of Black Theater Excellence. He's presently presenting his Banana Pudding Jazz Concerts at Theater for the New City, an ongoing project for some 21 years. So, again, thank you so much, Rome, for joining us. And, Ishmael, you can take it away now.
Yeah, well, my first encounter with a black connection to the Titanic was when I was about 3 years old. My uncle, my grandmother's brother, had one painting in the house, and it was of the Titanic. And I don't know the reason for that at the time, because I was very young, I was a kid. But then I learned that there was a toast, if you talk about the real people's art, that emerged from nowhere. Nobody knows who originated this, but there are many versions of it. And it posits a black man on the Titanic who's working in the boiler room. He's shoveling coal, and he's the first one to notice that the ship is taking water. And he tries to warn the captain, and the captain dismisses him because the Titanic was so invincible, they said that God couldn't sink it. I mean, it was like state-of-the-art, not even the state-of-the-art, but they wanted it to be like a five-star hotel, a luxury hotel, so they had all these luxurious items in there. And so finally, Shine, to save his life, dives overboard. And all these rich people in first class, like the Astors, I mean, some of the biggest, capitalists of the time, up there on the first class waltzing and dancing, and they had a band and everything. They finally realize the thing is sinking, and Cheyenne is swimming toward Harlem, and people get up on the bridge, or excuse me, in first class, and offer him all kind of bribes, you know, money, sexual, if he would save them. And he says, get your ass in the water and swim like me. So, I mean, that's the story. And then a lot of lies, you know, people start telling stories and lies. So Leadbelly put out the lie that Jack Johnson was in Black Passage. And we end the play with the Smithsonian, you know, Leadbelly's rendition of that song about how Jack Johnson was denied passage because the captain says, we ain't carrying no coal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so we put that in there. So we combine all these stories or versions. And the version that I adapted was from Langston Hughes. Langston Hughes wrote this down. It was in the oral tradition. Langston Hughes mm-hmm. wrote it down in 1965. He heard it on 8th Avenue. It's about 35 mm-hmm. lines. So what I do is extrapolate a lot of the issues in those 35 lines, and I come up with a 99-page script.
Right. and you mentioned that, or read that it's the Shine Challenge 2024 because you expect in the future that there will be another challenge challenge.
We have to follow the footsteps of Dorothy Hurston because mm-hmm. she embarrassed the middle class because she kept these stories alive. She went among mm-hmm. the people and recorded these songs. As a matter of fact, people think, you know, of the younger generation, they believe that Jan Winter of the Rolling Stone invented the term rock and roll. I mean, he actually invented the whole thing, you know. And Zildjian Hurston mentions rock and roll in 1942. So she was ahead of her time, and she recorded all this folklore. And see, what happens now, this is a subversive act, keeping these stories alive. Because what they're trying to do is eradicate our culture. What they're trying to do is exterminate black culture because they see black culture as the ringleader of diversity all over the world. They can't stop it. You know, they're trying to ban books. You know, I'm in touch with Toni Morrison's son, who's a mm-hmm. friend of the family, and he says that they banned her book and that meant more sales. Now you ban somebody's books, they go, well, you know, people go out and buy it because they say, well, why are they banning this book? So what they're trying to do is there's assault on black culture because black culture is seen as the ringleader of Chicano, you know, Native American, you know, because black culture was the one that resisted in the 1960s and refused assimilation. So that's why this political thing about wokeness, nobody ever asked these clowns what it means. I heard Joe Scarborough this morning use the term woke. You know, William Melvin Kelly wrote about wokeness in 1982. And what he meant was like being hip, you know. So, but they've mm-hmm. taken that term and turned it all around. But they're just scared and they're panicked. And that's why that explains Trump. Trump has tapped into all that anxiety and panic.
So Carla, do you want to add anything to the conversation as director, as... Yeah, that, you know, is really familiar with Ishmael Reed's work. I mean, very, very, you know, familiar with it. And in this particular work, it's. I didn't know what it was about when I just looked at the title. And then you think about shine, you know, as in brightness, but you think about shine as, you know, a derogatory term in reference to black people. But in this case, it can go anyway, either way.
Yeah, well, the name is S Shine, which Ishmael tells me some people think meant shoe shine, you know, which is mm-hmm. another derogatory slice at this. He's a mythic figure.
It's no longer derogatory because that's all blonde shiny shoes and lenses. Air Force.
Okay. But, you know, so I encourage the actors to play with it because I see it as a kind of cartoon in the Thomas Nast tradition of political cartoons. You know, so both funny and scary because, you know, here was this decision to do things like make a grand luxury liner with all the accoutrements of a five-star hotel, but they didn't bother to deal with the rivets, which were going to hold the ship together. You know, they substituted stainless steel with iron, which was going to rust and become brittle, right? Exactly. And that was one of the main causes for the ship actually broke apart as it went mm-hmm. down. And the other thing was that they didn't realize that like an early warning of global warming, that the icebergs had come out of the normal pattern, and they were further south, so they were in the path of the Titanic. But they were not aware of it until they were actually, you know, close to that area of the water. And other ships were warning them about it, but they did not take the warning seriously, and they didn't pass them on to the captain.
Emil Guillermo plays one of the characters. We have international cats. We have a Filipino, mm-hmm. Indian, a South Asian, a Manisha Shiva. We have Laura Robards, whose stepmother was Lauren Bacall, the distinguished acting family, the Robards, Jason Robards. And we have Roz Fox, who was brought to us by Rome Neal, who's running a Delco Award for my play, The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda. But maybe Rome wants to talk about this because Neal wrote that the polar bear and the shark, who are Shine's witnesses in the trial, they blame him for sinking the ship. And he presents his witnesses, polar bear and a shark, and they kind of steal a show. Maybe Rome wants to talk about that.
Yeah, I agree because, what you have, Rome's character share is just like so right on. So, Rome, why don't you talk about the polar bear and...
First of all, I want to say we need to put a local, national, and international ban on all of Ishmael Reed's plays. That way maybe we'll get an abundance amount of audiences to come to see the show.
Ban.
Because this is the play that everybody should see. This play is something everyone should see. I tell Ishmael numerous times, all of his plays, I've directed many of his plays over the years, and I really feel that his plays need to be have a larger audience. I mean, they need to be films. I mean, if you read or look at what we did with Shine, The Challenge, you see a movie right there, you know. It could be a stage play, but you can see an actual movie of this happening. You could be laughing under your seat at some of the absurd words that are said and the characterization. And my character of Polar Bear Sam is just off the water. What can I say? I mean, when he wrote it and he did, usually I'm directing his plays and I'll cast characters and things. And then Carla comes in and she directs his plays and but Ishmael is the ship. He's the one that, you know, he reached out and said, okay, I want so-and-so as this character. Rome, you're going to be Polar Bear Sam. Could you meet Maurice? And, he started picking these characters, and I'm like, where did he get these ideas that these people could be, these characters? And they just happened to perform and actually become the characters that he reached out for. Another thing about his characterizations, this man is a satirical genius, and over the years you've seen him in books, you've read his books, but now you can actually see them on stage. And that's a wonderment, you know, to see these writings come to life from the page to the stage. Again, I wanted to be on the film set, you know, and a massive budget for people to tune in and see these fantastic films that plays that he's written, and especially this one here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I was thinking, Wanda, that I'd try to. I would try to get Harvey Weinstein to be co-producer because everybody's going to see his movie. Harvey Weinstein, who's in prison, is the co-investor in The Color Purple, and a lot of people are going to see that. So maybe we should.
Really?
If anybody can tell me the jail where he's, as an inmate, maybe as grown, we should send a letter to him asking if he'd be the co-producer, and we'd be sure that people would flock to see this play. did you know that one? Harvey Weinstein?
No.
Producer of, he gets 20%. He invested in the musical, version has become the film. And I guess you see where the black actresses are complaining about their poor treatment in that film. So anyway, that's just a joke. People can watch this all over the world. As a matter of fact, Yuri Kageyama, who is a correspondent for Associated Press in Tokyo, she saw it in Tokyo. So if you go to New Yorican, NUYORICAN, NewYorican.org, you can order tickets.
Yeah.
You can order tickets. Mm-hmm. And what's the phone number there? Just go to that site, NewYorican, NUYORICAN, NewYorican. .com and Cara
.org.
I'm sorry. And Caridad de la Luz, the Emmy Award winning actress, is also part of the cast. She plays the prosecutor. She prosecutes Shine.
She's
and
good. Yeah.
Roz Fox, who was in a number of our plays, right? Rome.
Yes. Yes. That's right.
She was in play? Mother Hubbard. She was in Mother Hubbard.
Hey, Ishmael,
yeah.
While you're talking about the actors and actresses, I'm here, and this is Emil Guillermo. Hi, Wanda.
Oh, hey, Emil. I didn't know you were here.
Emil, tell me about the animal characters that you single out in your review.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about Ishmael's play, first of all, he has uncovered black history for so many people who don't understand or don't know that this has been a part of black history. Just like you said, you hadn't heard of Shine. I'd never heard of Shine. And it was an education for me to see how this black oral tradition had developed, you know, throughout the years. Langston Hughes heard something, put it in writing. Ishmael's taken it and has prosecuted the case or has actually defended Shine, put him in court, and had animals testifying to defend Shine. And to me, it's satirical, but it also is the reality, because how have black people been treated in history in American society? Slavery, blacks were enslaved and treated as animals. And there have been books written about that equation, slavery equating human beings with animals, African Americans. And so to me, as soon as I saw Polar Bear Sam and I saw the shark, I said, well, of course, who would come to the defense of an African American accused of destroying the Titanic? Who would come to his defense but the animals, but nature? And that is one of the subjects of this play, that it's more than just satirical, but there's a message here. And Neil, like you said, Rome Neil, he steals the show with his as the Polar Bear Sam, you know. And he talks about the speciesism that occurs in American society. I mean, we all should be anti-speciesist. But there is speciesism where we say, oh, they're animals. you know, different species better than others. But here, you know, who comes to the defense of the black man, of the African American, but Polar Bear Sam? And that,
but also
that
Jake the Shark. He's excellent,
yeah. Oh,
too, Maurice Carlton's character.
Maurice, very funny Maurice, you know, yeah, Jack. So I can't forget Jake the Shark, and you know, but Rome with his, you know, I thought he'd suffocate in this role because of his polar bear mask, but he comes through.
You should have seen the original polar bear mask that I had in the beginning. The full polar bear head.
Oh,
and,
wow.
It just so happened that Zoom couldn't take it and kept blanking me out, so I had to get a different mask.
You kept disappearing. Yeah. You have to have two eyes, a nose, and a mouth for Zoom to register you.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that's funny. So, Emil, you portray J. Bruce Ismay.
I was saying that's another take on what Emil is talking about. They don't want animals on Zoom. They blank them out.
Oh, really?
Isn't that interesting? Is that true?
They don't want animals.
Oh, they got animals.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. But I was just thinking about the shark character. You know, sharks, you know, they're kind of iconic in African diaspora, those of us who are descendants of enslaved Africans, because of that route across the ocean and the sharks that are there. So it's a different kind of spin on the shark motif, because, you know, you think about, you know, sharks are attracted to blood, and then this shark, he has respect for black bodies in the water. Because, you know, Shine gets to New York. I'm telling a story. Oh, I'm sorry. But anyway, you know, what Jake says, Jake the Shark says to the judge, and he's kind of like flirting with her. You know, a shark flirting with the jurist, right? Like, okay,
yeah.
Only in Ishmael's play.
I think he was just hungry.
Listen, we can talk about it, but you actually have to see this. See it and go to your website, go to your computer, go to the link and actually see these characters come to life. Carla's done a fantastic job of pulling together this play and putting it right in your homes, so you don't have to go anywhere. Just click. And you can actually see these characters, Ishmael Reeves' characters, come to life, and it's amazing. And it's part of our history. You know, we just left Black History Month, but this is a part of our history that is going to stay with us forever. You know, so don't miss it, folks.
The other thing is,
they can watch it any time, day or night. You know, Carl's got typo when it comes to culture. She directed a play in Ramallah, which included a Syrian and Palestinian cast. And then she directed a play in China. I saw that with my own eyes, where she whipped that thing together in a week, and she had these Chinese actors doing these long monologues in English. So she was perfect for this assignment because we have an international cast. And I even played. And I got one review about my performance from Bob Holman. He said, "Keep your day job."
Yeah. So Ishmael, tell us about your character that you portray, and then Emil, I want you to talk about your character too.
Watson has been put up by the prosecution to lie.
Yeah.
And they say if you lie about Shine, we will reduce your sentence and not prosecute your father, who's a number runner. So he gets up there and lies about Shine coming into it. At the end, you know, they talk about Afrofuturism. You know, this little hustle that these academics have invented, Afrofuturism. Black folklore has always been Afrofuturist. So Shine, it takes place in 1912, and then at least in 1940. So the people who, after the ship has sunk, and you know, they all go to Harlem to Sugar Ray's, which is a bar that was around in the 40s and 50s. Sugar Ray Robinson, the ex champion. So they mix up time in that play. So he goes in the bar. He says that he went in the bar and Shine came in and got drunk and admitted that he sank his ship. And then when he recognizes that Shine is an old friend of his, he recants and apologizes, and they send him back to prison.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is Ishmael Reed can keep his day job, but there's nothing like seeing this great satirist author on stage performing. It's hilarious just to see.
Emil,
yeah. I had to fill in one night for Spray Beloved Caviar, remember? And I got the mixed up, and I was up there.
Yes.
Left me stranded up there on stage.
Emil plays the owner of the ship.
Yeah, Ismay. Jay Bruce Ismay, and I have a fake mustache. It is fake. If I fooled you, maybe you might have thought that, oh, Emil grew a mustache for the pandemic, and now it's a full-blown mustache. But no, it's a fake mustache. And so it was a great. I didn't know anything about the Titanic story. I didn't even know there were black people there. I mean that's part of the thing that Ishmael was telling me about this story. And you know, the anniversary of the Titanic, thinking, I believe, is April 15th, right? It's coming up. And
yeah.
And so there's a kind of significance in the timing, you know, right after African, American History Month. And I just find that I learned so much playing this guy Ismay. He's a bad guy. And, Ishmael told me that it was that in the black community, the Titanic was an image of white supremacy or a symbol of white supremacy. And so, like I said, I had a great time. I love being part of what I call informally the Ishmael Reed Players. I have played now in two other productions, Conductor, and I was in Mother Hubbard a long, long time ago in Oakland.
You were in Hubbard City. You were in Hubbard City about the Oakland drug crisis.
Right. I was in Hubbard City, not Mother Hubbard. I'm sorry. My mistake. Hubbard City. And so it's always a joy when I get an email from Ishmael and says, hey, there's a play I'm writing. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe, I'll get to do it. But, I'm also a journalist. I did write a review. So I get, to break that wall, that media wall where people don't cover Ishmael stuff. And in the publications that I write for, I tell them all about, Ishmael's plays. And like I said prior, I was really struck by the animals coming to the defense of Shine here and the strong anti-speciesist message. I mean, anti-speciesism really is the next step, to fight racism. I mean, racism is bad enough, but you think about speciesism, the discrimination against species, and you see how far away that takes you from the human soul. You see that racism, speciesism, they're all related. They're all based on a kind of hate that we cannot really, afford to have in our lives. So it was really a great pleasure to play the villain in Ishmael Reed's play, The Shine Challenge. And, Wanda, if I may also say this, I think Rome is right. You ought to go to neorican.org and watch the video, watch the play. You can even get it onto your smart TV if you know how to do that. I mean, there's, your kids can tell you how to plug it in so you can watch it on a big screen. But the thing is, if you watch it and then you tell it and talk about it to your friends, that's the continuation of the black oral tradition. Watch the play, see what Ishmael has done, how he's taken Langston Hughes's writing that was taken from the oral tradition, and then create your own oral tradition, talk radio, go on the phone, talk to your friends about it, and then they watch it and they tell their friends. And I think this is what maybe Ishmael can talk about, this, the idea of what is the challenge of the of the Shine Challenge of 2024. I mean, it really is to see if we can continue to perpetrate this story or continue to keep the story alive.
Challenge is sort of like off-campus education. And, you know, jazz musicians have jam sessions where they try to top each other, and that's how jazz advanced. And tap dancing, the same thing. Tap dancing was based on a challenge where one hoofer tried to out-hoof the other hoofer. So I see this play as a challenge to future generations to develop this story even further, which is how Ulysses and all these other in the Bible, which were part of the oral tradition before they were written down. So I think it's very important that we keep our stories, because we have a formal stories where, you know, we learn about Shakespeare, but nobody tells you that Shakespeare was influenced by a black playwright named Terence. Shakespeare studied Terence in school. But nobody, you know, makes that connection. So we go to the Anglo school where we are anglicized, and then we have our stories off campus in the community, like Toast and folklore and those kind of stories. Because I remember a generation before radio, well, where radio was just being introduced, where people used to gather in people's homes and they would tell stories. So we have to keep that tradition alive.
Yeah, you know, Ishmael, you mentioned in the play that among the stokers who were, you know, burning the fires for the ship, the steam, you said there were Chinese, there were Asian Americans, or not Americans, but there were Asians among the stokers. Is that true?
Yeah, there were two or three. And
so that means I, as an Asian American, can take the Chinese in the boiler room who were stokers, and I can add to my Shine Challenge 2024.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a story that the people who are manning a lifeboat did not want to save one of the Chinese workers, but they relented. They finally lifted him aboard. So there's a story, and they follow that, you know, in some versions of the telling the story of the Titanic sinking, they follow his career and his history. So, and they were Irish. They were immigrants. In third class, the class that you were entered in, like first, second, third, there were possibilities of survival. You understand what I'm saying? In first class, most of the people survived. Second class, less. And in third class, a lot of people drowned. And the stokers, when they arrived on the bridge, most of the lifeboats had been taken. A lot of blood was made by the people in the ship and the owner. One theory is that Jay Gould is a millionaire, and Ismay was trying to sink the ship to collect insurance. That's the version of what happened. But by the time they arrived on the bridge, the captain made a big blunder. He said, women and children first. That meant that a lot of lifeboats were half empty because there were no, you know, because of that command. So, you know, if they not had that rule, some of the men would have survived.
Yeah. I was wondering, Ishmael, if you could, because it's kind of fitting that the New Yorican poetry cafe would sort of the place that where you produce your new work, and then it goes out because you're a native New Yorker, right? Aren't you?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York. And,
yeah, right.
Went to New York. I was there for 6 years in New York. Mm-hmm. But we have a multicultural alliance here based in Oakland here.
Mm-hmm.
Will be 50 years old in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And we get no coverage out here. We get international coverage, but we ignore it out here because I guess we're not selling fentanyl or whatever, you know, however black people make the news out here. But we have made an alliance with Native Americans, Asian Americans, and Hispanics and others for
mm-hmm.
50 years. And so we do cooperate and, you know, exchange ideas and exchange resources. And so I benefit very much from this. And we started out as a third world operation, but then we included the Irish and the Italians. And I've learned more about multi-ethnicity belonging to this organization, which has ties to the Southwest, the South, you know, the entire nation, than I learned about in the my Anglo missionary education.
Yeah, I was just thinking about also in the play you have these landmarks that are sort of central, like the place where people where the victory is celebrated, and you mentioned that that club, Sugar Ray's Cafe, flourished in the 1940s and 50s. And I was just wondering if you could maybe walk us through some of these locations that were like institutions in black community. And so it's kind of interesting, you know, on the one hand, this ship is going down, but on the other hand, you've got these black businesses that are flourishing. It's an interesting
contrast. By the way,
contrast.
The ship was built in Ireland, and it was flying under the British
Starlight
line, mm-hmm. but the major financing came from J.P. Morgan, who was an American.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, during my period as a young person, our heroes were boxers, athletes, especially
mm-hmm.
boxers. And, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson was one of our – he's very colorful and flashy, and I remember him at his height and also when he was on decline.
Mm-hmm.
But he did have a bar in Harlem, and in the 50s when my folks took me to New York, we passed that bar. He's standing outside with his pink Cadillac, very colorful character. This is after he'd been beaten in England by Randy Turpin. He'd been in Paris, and he partied too much, so he's nothing there. But Sugar Ray Robinson, you know, we salute Muhammad Ali, but Sugar Ray Robinson and Joe Louis confronted challenges that Muhammad Ali never had to confront. For example, they beat up military policemen in an incident in the South where two military racist cops came and started poking Joe Louis in the rib with a nightstick because he was in a segregated bus station. And Joe Louis said, well, I have the right to be here as you, I'm a soldier. And so they kept it up. And next thing I know, Sugar Ray Robinson, the onlookers knew Sugar Ray Robinson and Joe Louis were beating these guys up. And it only ended when somebody said, that's Joe Louis. some cop called him by out of his name. He put him in a trash can. So, you know, Muhammad Ali never confronted armed white men with authority in the way that these guys did. So they were our heroes, and so according to the legend or the toast, they end up at Sugar Ray Robinson's bar in Harlem. He was a bad
mm-hmm.
businessman. He had a cleaning. He had several enterprises in Harlem, but he was bad. He ended up financially, impoverished. And the last time I saw him, this shabby car pulls up to 125th Street around there. I was standing at the curb, and some guy kept looking at me and looking at me, and finally realized it was Sugar Ray Robinson. Hey, Chef, you know, this kind of thing. So, I mean, those were the heroes of that period. But as Jill Nelson said, there are people who have replaced them, you know, as spokespersons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just wondering if, since we've been talking about you, Rome, and Guillermo, you know, you portray, you know, the owner of the line, the luxury line. I was wondering if you could share maybe a little bit of you know, some of your, like, a favorite scene or something.
Oh, well, I have very I have a very small role, really, even though outsized in reality, because I'm the owner, builder of this great Titanic. But I have a very small role because, but I've learned that with Ishmael's plays, that there's no such thing as small roles, only small people. So I try
you
to
have
play
the most,
big.
Yeah, you have the line, what is it, only God could
sink it.
Only God could sink it, which, you know, which was,
oh, that's right, that's right.
The fatal flaw of all of the thinking.
But I also say that it must have been a black man, right? And I say that there's one black man in there, and it must have been him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He must have been guilty,
yeah.
Right.
He must be guilty because he's a black man, right?
Yeah. Mm. So I'm all-purpose villain, you know, and then when in doubt, I go to God.
Mm.
But like I said, it's I never knew about J. Bruce Ismay, but he's an historical character, and no one talks about him, really. I never heard of him before. He never got over it.
Even he just retired and slid into obscurity.
Right. I can relate to that. So, no, but I think if you ask people about the Titanic, they might say, "Oh, yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio, right? I'm king of the world, right?" That they know that line from the movie, and I think the movie has kind of replaced for a lot of people what the Titanic was about. But the play really gave me an opportunity to go back into history, not just African American history, but to the actual thing, the actual event, and it's really astonishing how the ship was viewed, how people in Europe viewed it, but how people in America viewed it. And then when Ishmael talks about how as a small boy he saw his relative with the only painting on the wall was a painting of the Titanic.
Yeah.
It did something to the people and to society. Hey, we're building this thing. It's a symbol of all that's great. Oh, but not for black people, but, you know, for all that's great in society in America, you know, and whites, but not all you other folks, you know, blacks and, you know, minorities and immigrants. Weren't very many immigrants in 1915, you know, and the thing about it, 1890, they were already excluding Chinese, right? And they were colonizing the Filipinos in 1904 at the same time as the Titanic. And then in 1924, the most exclusive immigration passed at a quota for 50% from Europe and 0% from Asia, except for the Filipinos who were colonized, so they were allowed to come. But just think, those immigration laws, what were the immigration laws during the Titanic? Like I said, 1924 was the most exclusive immigration law. And here we are 100 years later, and we're no closer to an ideal stance of what to do with people from elsewhere. So the play really did open up avenues of history, avenues of understanding where we are now. And as I said, if people go to newyorican.org and they check out the play, then they can tell their story. Something will resonate, and it'll open up avenues for them, and they'll tell stories to other people and challenge people to watch it and come up with their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in our closing few minutes, like 10 or so, I wanted to, I have a couple of questions, and then Rome, I wanted to give you an opportunity to, and you too, Ishmael, if you want to share a favorite scene, whether you're in it or not, it's okay. And I was just thinking about the whole notion of a toast, and I think that's something that a hip-hop culture adopted, the toast. It's sort of like when you think about the jolly, you know, the African griot, you know, we toast each other.
Right.
You know, if that's right. That's an African thing. We do that. And so this character,
right.
You know, Shine, mythic that he might be, is a hero, you know, like he got away, you
right.
know. You know, the information was there for the captain and for this other, the person who was found drunk and couldn't be revived. And then, so it's like, okay, well, I gave you the information and I'm out of here. But then you think about character. You really have this actor, Brian Simmons, who plays as Shine. He's really good at being this kind of character, you know, where he just clobbers, you know, the witnesses with, well, you know, like he's just asking questions about their character. Like they were scoundrels, you know, they were drunkards, you know, they weren't doing their work. They weren't doing a job. And that's another thing that's real African around how, you know, our character is what's important, you know, not money. You can't buy character. You can't buy values. You know, these people, you know, like that is a reason why the ship sank, and the whole idea of not having enough lifeboats, not even planning to rest to have, you know, the people that were on the third class be able
right,
to even
right.
be saved. I mean, just the whole
right.
the whole thinking around it was so skewed, you know? And
well,
and it's
well,
really
class,
great, you know, that
class,
it shows up, you know, Ishmael,
yeah.
in your writing. Hmm?
It's a class and race, and all
yes.
these different subjects are drawn out from those 35 lines that Langston Hughes recorded. So when
mm-hmm.
When our character Shine talks about social Darwinism to the captain, he says, no, this is not social Darwinism. Darwinism. In England, everybody knows their place.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so cynical that he says, well, it's very noble for the Irish to drown because that's much better than these coffin ships they took to America. And I'm reading right now the diary of somebody on one of those coffin ships, and in those days, maybe 50% of the people survived to get to America. So he says it's much better for them to die serving their betters. And that's
mm-hmm.
all, is that a laugh? That's a groan that goes through the courtroom. So
mm-hmm.
I think in terms of some of my favorite scenes, I love
mm-hmm.
the play between Roz and Keledan, the prosecutor.
Yeah.
and the judge, because they rigged the whole thing. And
mm-hmm.
they really are conspiring to find Shine guilty. And I think that banter, that's really, really brilliant. And I love the animal parts, you know, where I think, I don't know, some people are just saying that the polar bear, the script really lights up when the polar bear, the shark, enters the scene. And Rome, I mean, Rome was perfect for that polar bear sound. I think I stole a line from Snoop Dogg who said, sipping on gin and juice. One of those rappers said, sipping on gin and juice.
Yeah, yeah, that's
the polar
yeah.
bear said, well, I'm just sitting here minding my own business, sipping on gin and juice when the ship is getting toward me. So it's great to humanize and personify, you know, as Emil said, the animals. So they're a good part. And Laura Robards plays the captain's daughter. And
mm-hmm.
she just, she's so convincing in that role. So we're very
mm-hmm.
fortunate to have these actors, except Emil. Sometimes he just steals the whole thing, like that last play, the conductor. He's the only one who got applause, his scenes. Remember? Do you remember that?
True.
Yeah, that's true. You guys.
Yeah.
And then he said, he started writing the play. He started to add lines to the play and stuff. So I don't know if I'm going to use you anymore, Emil.
So you let me improv there, Israel.
Tom Sobolev got saved in the final
Tom
script.
Tom Sobolev got saved, yeah.
Yeah. Nosy neighbor.
I just want to say that Ishmael is a genius, and folks who are listening to this podcast, please do yourselves a favor, do your family and your friends a favor, share this with them. Go to newyourican.org, NUYORICAN.org, and pay for it, tune into it, and see this play, because you will have the time of your life, something different. Get away from the program TV and the program movies that they give you, and come to Ishmael Reed's world. It's like I was sitting on this iceberg, and I saw this ship approaching me. I thought it was unusual because the captain wasn't at his bridge. So I looked in the captain's bedroom, and he was drunk as a skunk, and you were trying to wake him up. Those are the only words that I remember somewhat from the play. Okay, so thank you for the interview. That's been wonderful.
That was really great. I like court scenes. I used to want to be an attorney, and just seeing how the judge and the prosecutor are in each other's pockets, and we know they're in each other's pockets, but you know, I'm talking, you know, not on stage, but in the actual courts. But we don't get a chance to see it. So this right here, like, you know, sort of, you know, a caricature of justice. And then at the end, they're all the same anyway, you know, the way they hook up, which is kind of the way I think about the politicians. It doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. You're the same thing. And so it's just really great. Just like, did she just... you know, say sustain? Did she just deny? I mean, it was just, it's great. People really need to go, you know, go see it. You know, go to newyourican.org, get your tickets, and then you can join the conversation. We're like, what? Yes.
Okay. And they can also make comments on it. Is that true? Ish. Caller, do you know that?
We don't know.
But anyway,
they can always go to your website, you know.
On the credits, we give Ishmael's website where people can send comments.
And they can hear my interpretation of "Nearer, My God, to Thee." Would my mother, my late mother, be so proud of me playing that Christmas song? "Nearer, My God, to Thee."
Very nice.
That's what they were supposed to be singing as the ship sank.
Yeah.
Dear my God.
Okay.
Yeah, all the musicians went down with the ship playing.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Were they black people, the musicians?
No, they were British and Irish.
Yeah. There was,
I think it was one Frenchman.
There was one black person aboard. He was Haitian.
Mm-hmm.
He was on board with his family. His wife and two daughters. The wife and the two daughters were saved. He drowned. But he was a member of the Haitian elite, and I think Christophe was one of his ancestors. But, I mean, he's gone away. So he drowned. So that's one black person who was on board.
Mm-hmm. I had known about him because I don't think I ever watched the movie, but when they were doing the Hollywood version, I just did some research on, you know, who was on the ship, and that the one black person, the Haitian person of African descent, did come up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I just think, you know, like, you just, you know, you don't go around messing with black people because we bigger than you think, you know, like, you know, it's like an Anansi story too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What kind of story?
No.
Anansi, the spider, the trickster.
Yeah,
Burr
yeah,
rabbit,
absolutely.
You know, folktale.
Yeah.
You can't trap us.
I've used Anansi in 3 novels. I think 12 people have bought. And I'm not really aware of that. I have a detective named Nance Saturday.
Mm.
And Calvin Lockhart, the actor, he was able to identify that right away as Anansi. I think he's from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. You got all those tools, you know, Ishmael. You know how to deploy all the weapons of literary arts.
Folklore has been used by composers and writers, since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's
a real resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I was looking for the Lead Belly piece, I didn't get a chance to listen to all of it, but I did upload it. But then I found the Chris Smith one. Didn't get a chance to listen to that one either. Christopher M. Smith, October 12th through 1879 to October 4th, 1949. I think he composed the song. I uploaded that
song
too.
That Lead Belly is singing. Lead Belly didn't compose it.
This one here, I was. You know, I was trying to find Lead Belly. Shine in the Titanic, and I couldn't figure out how to download that from the Library of Congress. But then I was looking, I think it was in some of your notes, Carla, the one Balling the Jack, that one, he wrote this.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So I was going to play this.
Actually, if you want to hear the Lead Belly, just go to YouTube.
Yeah, I did, but I'm not sure. I mean, I'm going to listen to it anyway, but I'm not sure if it's the right one.
Also part of the legend is that when Jack Johnson heard that the ship had sank, he did the Eagle Rock dance. And if you go to YouTube, you can see Jack Johnson doing the Eagle Rock dance.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's where the Eagle Rock
Belly,
comes from, the dance.
That
oh.
Song.
Yeah, that's in the song that did the Eagle Rock dance.
Okay.
Head stunk.
Yeah. Okay. All right. If you want to email me any links to any songs, I can play them later. But I'm going to play what I found, and we'll see.
Hey,
we'll see how it works.
Thanks, Wanda. Thanks, Wanda. You're the only one who covers us out here. Get off the violin.
Oh.
Get off the violin.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. Congratulations, on this wonderful work. And Carla, congratulations on the great direction. And Emil and Rome, congratulations on your performances and being a part of this wonderful work. Certainly historic and I think I might go again because it was heck of funny. Oh my goodness, it's really, 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 really good, and the good guys win. You know, like the good guys win, so that's nice.
Y'all
take good care.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Bye bye. So that was, there were no lyrics to that. So I found the Lead Belly one. So I'm going to play this other piece, which is not the right one. It's just called Shine. And then I'm going to upload the other song, the Titanic one, and you can listen to that. So I'm going to play this one first while I get the other one ready.
And it's just one of the first pictures long years ago that people, before our people was free, they sang on plantation. Well, Baptist people were the first nomination there was in them times. And when they'd get together and go to church at Baptist church, they'd sing. And when they sang by this song, they didn't speed up their music. They'd take it slow and easy. Let it shine on me. Let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Let it shine on me. Let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Now the message, they're going to come along and pick it up. That's the late generation. And they picked up the music. Let it shine on me. Let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Let it shine on me. Let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Now when the message give out of him, they just keep right on just like they say. Hey, amazing grace, how sweet it sounds. That saves a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Let it shine on me, let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Let it shine on me, let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Now here comes the Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost come along late. And when they come along late, they get your name straight because they drive the soul. Don't fool yourself. Now you're going to pick up the speed, and that's where you get this rhythm and swing at. Let it shine on me, let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Let it shine on me, let it shine on me. Let your light from the lighthouse shine on me. When they give out a hymn, must I be carried to the sky on flower of victory? And must I fight to win the prize and sail through blood and sea? Let it shine on me, let it shine on me. Your light from the lighthouse shine on me. Shine on me, let it shine on me. Your light from the lighthouse shine on me.
That was Lead Belly singing Shine, giving a lesson as well. And so I am uploading the Titanic, and I will play that as soon as it is ready. But in the meantime, I am going to talk a little bit and give you the information again about this wonderful play, the Shine Challenge. And again, go to the website for the NewEurekan.org and get your tickets so that you can see the Shine Challenge. And again, you can watch it any time of the day that you like. It is up through the 15th of April, 15th of March. Sorry, next week. And happy International Women's History Month and happy International Women's Day to all the women. And let me see if this song, I should probably play a song for the women. But anyway, let me see if I can, this song is up yet. My computer is moving really, really, really slowly this morning. I don't know why. So, let's see. Oh, here it is. So, yeah. So, let's see if this is the right one. It's long. It's like 5 minutes. I hope so. All righty. Thank you so much for listening and joining us for another edition of Wanda's Picks. Congratulations to Ishmael Reed on another great work in his canon. And, yeah, here it is.
Yeah, 1912. Blind Lemon and myself, we used to do this. And it's, I'm going to say something about Jack Johnson on that, but you people won't get offended at that because I won't sing it to the colored people. I leave out that voice. I can sing it, but leave out that voice. But anyhow, I'm going to sing it to you. I'll show you. Yeah, I'm going to sing it. And I'll show you. It's Jack Johnson was a prize fighter at this time. That's the time it was Jeffries, you know, 1912 or something like 10. But this is when the Titanic went down. It left down there, you know, and wasn't nothing on that. The people used the name as crackers, which I don't use that name. I just people, you know. I said what they are. But anyhow, this is the song about, and this tells a true story just about what happened on that ship in 1912. It's the first time I learned how to play on a 12-string guitar, 1912. I could play it on a 6, but you had to get your 12 and get your mind together. Get your hands together, so I learned to play it, and I'm going to play it for you. On the sea, the band is playing Jeremiah God today. Baby, Titanic, fairly well. It was a midnight on the sea, the band is playing Jeremiah God today. Baby, Titanic, fairly well. Titanic, when it got its load, Captain, he hollered all aboard. Baby, Titanic, well, Titanic, when it got it slowed, Captain, he hollered all aboard. Bambi, Titanic, very well. Titanic was coming round the curve when it run into that great big iceberg. He couldn't turn. Bambi, Titanic, very well. He didn't see it. Titanic was coming round the curve when it run into that great big iceberg. Fancy, Titanic, fancy well. Titanic was sinking down, they had them lifeboats around. Fancy, Titanic, fancy well. When the Titanic was sinking down, they had them lifeboats around. Fancy, Titanic, fancy well. They had them lifeboats around, saving the women and children, letting the men go down. Fancy Titanic, fairly well. They had them lifeboats around, saving the women and children, letting the men go down. Fancy Titanic, fairly well. Want to get on board, Captain? He says I ain't hauling no coal. Fancy Titanic, fancy well. Jack Johnson wanted to get on board. The captain, he says, I haul a no coal. Fancy Titanic, fancy will. Talk about it now. Glad he didn't get on down. When he heard about that mighty shock, might have seen the man kind of eager off. Fare thee, Titanic, fare thee well. When he heard about that mighty shock, might have seen the man kind of eager off. Fare thee, Titanic, fare thee well. Titanic, when the thing went down, standing on the mountain.
We're taking back the power, cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights. Taking back the power, cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights.
Wanted for my daughter, born to be a leader. A visionary, powerful, the truth is what I feed her. You can know the difference very second that you meet her. Consistent breed of woman, ain't playing the backseater. No prima ballerina, making happen through Latina. One in four women homeless cause someone beat her. Respect that we deserve is the power that we earn. Hashtag me too, my body, my turn.
We need reunification, cause we treat the genders like two different nations. And we don't have time to be having no patience. Remember last time that we waited for changes. I like a woman that said for what's right. I like a woman that said for a right. Still go to work just as hard for that bad. Cause she only make
half
with a mimic and
I. We're taking back the power, cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights. Taking back the power, cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights.
When we stand in allegiance, we will never be defeated. She is so powerful, but mistreated. I've seen what society thinks she should be. But every single woman is unique. You are different, you are gifted. Stronger than you know, they can never take your soul. Broken, beaten, torn to pieces. Stronger than you know, they can never take your soul.
We've been chastised and laughed at, but women always bounce back. Limit my abilities, I'm swerving way past that. Hold a thing, grasp that, we can never backtrack. Women run the world and that's a fact, snap or cap that. Wanna make a change, oh that's funny, me too. They objectify women and they thinking this cool. Wanna talk about equality, I'm joining in too. I'm Dakota, I guess you could call me Mrs. Me Too.
We're taking back the power, cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal right. Taking back the power, cause we deserve it.
Powerful beyond belief, I breathe soul into life. Not despite of, because I am women. I am the revolution, ancestral calling, sojourner's truth. Susan B. Anthony and Ida B. Wells paved the way so that Ava DuVernay could create today. Blinded by divinity, our powers go on to infinity. United pillars, a liberty.
We're taking back the power, cause we deserve it. A women's right,
right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights.
I'm going to play another interview. This one's from the archives, and it was recorded on March 8th, 2012. I was interviewed Sister Lola Hanif, whom, you know, she's an author. She is the founder of the now that I need to say it, I can't think of it. The women's group, healing group that met at the HHREC, the Health and Human Resources Center, for many, many years. So anyway, I'm looking at it right here in my archives, and I'm like, oh, let me play this. I don't remember the conversation, but I know it was awesome. And so enjoy on International Women's Day. So Sister Lola Hanif is a humanitarian and community activist. She is founder and director of Lola's Light, an organization established to promote good personal and community mental, spiritual, and physical health. She holds a bachelor's degree in health education with an emphasis in health issues in the African-American community and a master's degree from the University of Creation Spirituality. You know, I didn't even know that part.
Okay.
So that makes sense about why you host the Sacred Space Spiritual Support Group, where you host it.
Yeah, well, it just all kind of works in there together.
Mm-hmm. It certainly does,
Yeah.
And you established Sacred Space Spiritual Support Group in 2007, and over 130 single-count African-American women have been meeting monthly ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Sacred Space is a spiritually-based, emotionally safe, and supportive environment for African-American women to gather, network, experience a sense of community support, and is a means of advocating healthy, peaceful African-American families.
Yes.
Sacred Space offers presentations and information regarding good mental, spiritual, and physical health practices.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you have also created an all-natural shea butter healing balm, which has proven to be effective for relief of arthritic joint pain.
Yes.
Yeah, and you are a board member for the Black Women's Media Project, the project that puts on,
The Be Still Retreat.
The Be Still Retreat. Is there one coming up soon?
Actually, I believe it's coming up in May, but don't quote me. The last one we had was in January, and it was spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so far away. It's all the way up the hill at Merritt College. I'm like, I liked it down there, you know, at the Aquatic Center. That was nice, but I guess you outgrew it, huh?
Yeah, we outgrew the space, you know. Mm-hmm. We had grown to such a degree, we had to turn so many people away, had such a waiting list, and so after, it was about 4 years, nearly 5 years, that we found another location.
Mm-hmm.
And so this past gathering, there were about, oh my goodness, up to 250 to 300 people who turned out, and
Wow.
We used to just say African-American women, but men are coming now too, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a great time.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And you're a steering committee member for Welcome to the Table. And I had some people on my show that are part of Welcome to the Table.
Oh, really?
Yeah, an organization which promotes healing regarding the legacy of slavery. And
Yeah.
I never heard of Welcome to the Table before, because what happens is they were the people who I had on my show were presenting as a part of Attitudinal Healing.
Ah.
Yeah, they were there, and I get things from Kokomon and Sister Aisha.
Yeah.
And then I say, okay, well, that looks good. Can I talk to your folks on my radio show? And she hooked us up, and it was just so interesting. You know, these white folks working on healing their community and making conscious efforts at repairing the damage.
Well, this one woman, her name is Holly Fulton, I believe that's her last name,
mm-hmm.
and she is a descendant of one of the founders kind of in this country of slavery. At least her family goes back to like the 1700s.
Wow.
And so she's very active in trying to reach a place of peace and balance among the people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so far it's been very good. We've been meeting for several months now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At Attitudinal Healing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of great things go on over there, don't they?
I know, don't they? Yeah. And you also offer support and outreach to youth and the elderly through Compassionate Companions. All these great names. Welcome to the table, Compassionate Companions.
Yeah.
Sacred space, spiritual support.
Just
Lola's kind of right.
Divinely inspired, I feel.
Oh, yeah, really nice. So, wow. So I guess we'll start, and then we'll just sort of make our way through all of these various tributaries, you know, that are the river of your life, huh?
Okay.
So let's start with the Sacred Space Spiritual
yeah.
Support Group. I know you've been doing it for years because
yeah.
I get invitations, and
uh-huh.
I thought, I mean, I didn't know. I thought it was like a special group of people, and you had
no.
to be a recovering, you know, like sort of in remission from cancer, or
no.
you know, or and I didn't know it was just for anyone who wanted, any black women who wanted to get together,
right. exactly.
and sort of, I mean, because I, you know, like I hardly, I mean, besides your group, I don't think there are any many. Groups where black women get together and, you know, just sort of work on developing their relationship with one another and with
yes.
themselves and with
yes.
the divine.
Well, you know, I say we black women, we are the glue.
Mm.
So, you know, and it starts with us. I mean, if we don't love ourselves, then how are we going to love somebody else, you know?
Right.
So a lot of times we say, what's wrong with the kids? What's wrong with the kids? You know, they're this, they're that. Well, you know, we need to take a look at ourselves and really go within and do some real sincere work.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And each month when you have these sacred space gatherings,
mm-hmm.
you have different themes. And
yeah.
So I was wondering if you could talk about sort of how you came to establish sacred space.
Okay.
And how have you been able to sustain it? Because, I mean, even though, you know, there are women who support you with their presence and people
mm-hmm.
give presentations, it seems like you are the one that makes it happen.
Yes. Well, actually, I'll start it off by telling you, I went back to school when I was age 44.
Mm-hmm.
And I had started taking some classes on a regular basis down to in L.A. at the community college down there, and came up here, and my daughter persuaded me to go to San Francisco State with her one day. She was getting ready to leave the country, and I had to do some paperwork towards that. So she says, oh, Mom, why don't you fill out an application? I'm like, nah. She says, oh, no, why not? Why not? You got the grades. I'm like, okay. So I looked up, and I got accepted. So that's how I went on through with the undergraduate there at San Francisco State.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on to graduate school, discovered that when I was in Egypt, actually, and I was telling this this person that I did not know, she was a counselor, and I was I'm about to finish school, and I just have a feeling I've got to go back. I'm not through. She looked at me, and she goes, I know what you need to do. There's a school called University Creation something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You should check them out. So I did, and it turns out that was my graduate project. I called it Just Sisters,
oh.
and it was something very similar to Sacred Space,
mm-hmm.
Except it was an all-day event. There were several presenters, and we just ate and talked and laughed, and there was a sister who was rather elderly at the time and always wanted to dance, and so she got the opportunity to dance with scarves, and everyone had tears in their eyes. They were so moved. It was just very moving. And so a few years went by, and I was doing social work with women who were HIV positive, and the executive director kept telling me, I really want you to do a project with the women, this and that, and you're the one to do it. And I'm like, okay, sure. So as it turned out, I She said, girl, why don't you start doing some research on that? This was about a year or two after she first told me about it. So I did, and this is what I came up with. It, initially, it was for my clients, but then more women started turning out from the community, actually, than my client base, you know, and we outgrew the funding and outgrew the space, and so lo and behold, we found the location now, which has been an absolute blessing, and we've been there ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So... that's yeah. how it started.
Okay. What about the themes that you have for the different monthly gatherings?
Yeah.
How do you decide sort of what you're going to have, you know, what's going to be the theme, and how do you find the people that present?
Well, you know, lots of times, you know, people will come up to me and they say, oh, sister, I know, I have a really good idea. We really need to talk about this. And I'm like, okay, check, you know, and it's in the back of my mind.
Uh-huh.
And then, lo and behold, somebody, it's like the universe or the creator will present somebody along the way who is focused just on that, or either this person that mentioned it has an idea, or it just kind of evolves like that. I mean, as a matter of fact, I'll never forget what happened one time. This wasn't this past January, but the January of last year. In that December, I ran into a young woman in the grocery store over the holidays that I hadn't seen in a couple of years, and turns out she had finished her doctorate degree and so forth. And I was, oh, how are you doing? She had gotten married, had a baby. I'm like, oh, wow, that's wonderful. As I was walking away, she said something about, yes, and my doctorate degree, and my project was on light skin, dark skin. I stopped. And I turned around. I said, what did you say? And I walked back, and her friend goes, oh, it was dynamite, too. It was dynamite. So I'm like, okay, you got to do this. So she kicked off 2011 for us. You know, her name was Dr. Natalie Pearson Trummel. That's her name now.
Mm-hmm.
But so, and it was incredible. It ended up being two parts, January and February. And we all just, oh, my goodness, just learned a lot. And just learning and growing a lot from each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how things evolve, through need and so forth, and just an issue or just kind of a burning desire, and it manifests, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe could you tell us maybe some of the other topics that have that you all have had as, you know, central themes over the past, 5 years now?
Yeah, it's been 5 years, mm-hmm. yep. Well, let's see. We've had, Linda Compton. She's a life coach, and
mm-hmm.
she also does EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, and it's also called tapping. That's a way of tuning in to what's really bothering you, you know, affecting it. We're affected by certain parts of our body, you know, through certain emotional or spiritual issues that are affecting us. So she's done a few presentations with us, and then there's been Sister Sharon Jacobs. She's a certified colon hydrotherapist, and oh man, she is really awesome. She's got a fantastic office over on Telegraph, and just a very, 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 very thorough sister, and very professional, and I was really impressed with her and her knowledge about herbs and olive oils and these type of things. And then, of course, there's Sister Rashida Lee. She's also a life coach and a spiritual advisor. And then we, we had a man that he kicked off this year. He was in February. He's an elder in the community. His name is B. Joe Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my goodness, he had so many incredible experiences to share with us. It was so emotionally moving and healing. He was actually on the balcony when Martin Luther King was assassinated, and incredible experiences, you know. So, and I talked about riding his motorcycle around the perimeter of Africa, except through South Africa. He said he wasn't doing that, you know, because that was when apartheid was happening. But so we just try to have a variety of things, you know. Another sister, Lori Camille, has done healthy cooking classes for us, just a lot of a variety of things that we really focus on.
Mhm. Yeah, and then I know I think it was one time, or maybe it was a part of another presentation, but a sister was teaching people how to make wands, and
and
you had like these healing stones that were
absolutely
part of the wand.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what's her name?
Absolutely. Now you know I know her name. She's right on the top. Sister Yaya Yaniba is her name. She's a fantastic sister, very, very deep sister, very knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
So we made, well, 1 month we studied the stones and we talked about the energies and this and that, and then the next month we came back and we created wands. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. So that was lots of fun.
Yeah. That's really great. And then the space you meet in is it's a really wonderful space, because I believe there's also yoga happens in that space too, right?
Oh, yeah. A lot of great things happen in that space. They have been very, very nice to us, very gracious to us, very
mm-hmm.
open. It's East Bay Meditation Center, and it's a wonderful space. They have they're very very accommodating people for us, and I'm really, really grateful, really grateful.
Mm-hmm. So this this coming gathering, and it's always on the third Thursdays, right?
Mm-hmm. Third Thursday of the month from 4 to 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And what's the theme or topic this time?
Well, the next one, the one coming up, is going to be focused on healing. We have so much pain and anguish and violence in our community. It's just running rapid. I mean, just about everyone you run into, you know, someone has experienced some violence directly, or a loved one close to them, and it's sometimes you can just feel it in the air. And so Sister Louisa Tisch, who is a fabulous sister, she's a Yoruba priest, among other wonderful things, and has so much knowledge to share with us, and such a loving, healing person. She's going to present to us, and we're all going to share in a ceremony to help with the healing of the pain and so forth in our community, and thus to project, you know, actually around the world. I mean, that's what it's about, you know. A lot of people say, oh my goodness, I don't know what's going on. I just feel so tired. I feel so sad. I don't know why. I could just cry at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes it's almost like it's palpable, you know. You can just feel it, you know. So we're going to really step out there and really address the healing, you know,
mm-hmm.
a healing for the community and
right.
humanity.
Mm-hmm. Right, as well as personally for
absolutely.
The those of us that might be grieving.
Absolutely.
And maybe don't even know it.
No, exactly,
mm-hmm.
exactly, because we're so used to make and do, you know, and just pushing on through. Oh, how are you feeling today? Oh, I'm all right, because this society tells us we're supposed to be all right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we've got all these bells and whistles, and, you know, we can do this and do that, but the bottom line is, how do you really feel in your heart, and do you really know how you feel in your heart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it's about. It seems to be so much anger and so much pain hanging out there too, you know.
Mhm. Right.
Yeah.
And then people don't have a chance to process it, because they have to
absolutely.
Get on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
And then so it's not resolved, but it's still
mm-hmm.
it's still there.
Yeah, and then we get sick, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it manifests.
Right.
Festers, and it manifests in our body somewhere, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, about the Ma'afa.
Yes.
And, you know, people think about the Black Holocaust.
Yes.
As something that's an event, and it
yeah.
happened and is over. And and then we look at, you know, those of us that are more aware
mm-hmm.
realize that, you know, there are residual psychological effects
oh, absolutely.
Of enslavement. And, you know, and naming it, you know, as
mm-hmm.
Dr. DeGruy is most well known for, as, you know,
yeah.
post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Absolutely.
But then you think about, this is not just Black people that are affected.
Exactly.
People seem to think, oh, the slavery thing, that's y'all thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, the slavery thing is the whole world's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
Absolutely.
So, you know, we're all connected around that pain.
That's right. That's right. It seems like it's just something that's hanging there,
mm-hmm.
you know, over us all, because we all have these, all these side effects or these after effects or these,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these preconceived ideas and all these things we're affected by, and we don't even realize it, you know, or
mm-hmm.
these stereotypes. And we stereotype ourselves, you know. It's like,
mm-hmm.
like we don't, the other folks don't have to, you know, do it to us now anymore. It's like we've taken it on ourselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's has the level of violence in the community, you know, nowadays is part of the evidence of that. It's part of this self-hate, you know, how we, you know, we keep on just doing it to ourselves, you know. Someone, you know, quoted to me, you know, that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, used to say that there was a time going to come when blood is going to flow in the street, you know, as hard as a horse's brow, you know. And a lot of things that we used to read that different people said in those days and so forth, we think, oh, wow, ooh, my goodness, that's really, that's way out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the stuff is like, it's here almost, you know. I mean, we can feel it if we, you know, recognize it. So I think it's really time, and it's on us to heal ourselves, because we are the mothers of humanity, and if not us, then who, is what I say.
Mm-hmm. Right,
you know.
Exactly. And then the when and the now, because
yes,
if it's
yes.
something that's, you know, urgent in our community, we can't
yes.
wait.
No.
You know, for someone else to say, okay, well, let me put it on the list.
Yeah, right. It's true, sis.
Yeah. I was just going to go back to Egypt. You
mm-hmm.
said you were in Egypt, and then I know,
yeah.
like, your email address is ISIS.
Yeah.
You know, it was honey. So,
yeah.
So tell us about Egypt, and who did you meet in Egypt that set you on this journey?
Well, you know. This
was she an angel? I mean, who is this person?
Well, she probably was. God rest her soul. She was a sister that she had her own travel group,
mm-hmm.
and honest to goodness, I don't remember her name at the moment. She passed away a couple of years after we returned.
Mm-hmm.
But we were sailing down the Nile, and
nice.
And
sailing
yeah.
down the Nile. This
yeah,
sounds so
exactly.
lovely.
Well, I can never keep up with if it was up or down. You know, when I would say down, they oh no, we're going up the Nile. Oh, okay, sure. Okay, but so we were talking, and I was really like, you know, like really perplexed. I'm like, oh, I just have a feeling that I'm not finished yet, you know, but I don't know just
mm-hmm.
what I'm going to do. And
yeah.
and I said, I'm thinking about doing a master's in public health or something. And she stopped and she looked at me and she goes, that's not what you need to do. And I'm like, whoa, okay.
Mm-hmm.
She said, no, when we get back, there's a school called University Creation, something like that, Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, wow, it's Spirit. I'm like, whoa. She said, they're accredited and they're funding. They're funded and they have master's programs. I'm
mm-hmm.
like, okay. As soon as I got back, I was exhausted. The next day, I'm on the phone, you know, finding this place, and just fell in love with it then. So that's how I found out about it, and it just has continued, helped me to continue on my journey, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
yeah.
really wonderful. And, you know, you're a mother and a
yeah.
wife.
Yeah.
You know, you're
yep.
juggling all these various aspects of
yes.
yourself. Yeah, so talk about, you know, sort of, you know, this calling that, you know, you didn't hear, but then once someone pointed out that the trumpet was blowing, like, oh, yeah, I hear
yeah.
it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so how, talk about, you know, being a mother and a wife and a daughter and maybe a sister.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, talk about how you sort of juggled all that. And where are you from? Are you from California? Were you raised here?
I originated in Kansas, a little town called Coffeyville, Kansas.
Coffeyville.
Yeah, okay. It's right on the Kansas and Oklahoma border. I don't know if you ever heard of the Dalton Gang, but they were notorious for having robbed. They just continually robbed banks, and so the folks in the town decided they weren't going to do that no more. So that's where they met their Waterloo, so to speak. So, but this was back in the, I think, the late 1800s, early 1900s. 1900s, but that's where I originated from, and I always had this feeling, sis, you know, I always felt really like I was, I tell people I thought I was adopted until, you know, because I felt like I just never really fit in. I used to wake up some morning in summertime, and I was like, oh, God, why did God do this to me, you know? The sun would be radiating from the ground already, and I just felt like, oh, Lord. But I loved my family very much and so forth, but I always look forward to moving to California. And so I migrated to California when I was actually a senior in high school to live with an aunt and to help her out with her child care. And so from there, you know, the story continues. I lived in L.A. for, I don't know, maybe 20 years or so, and my second marriage, we migrated to Washington State because I just had, once again, this deep calling inside of me, you know, that we had to get out. You know, that's when the big drug epidemic was really kicking off.
Yeah,
you know?
The crack cocaine.
Oh, my gosh.
And the guns being.
The guns. All of that stuff was jumping off then, and I just felt it. In our neighborhood, you know, at that time, but it was just moving. You could tell. So we migrated up there and lived there about 8 years, and I said we spent the first two trying to convince ourselves we liked it, and the other six trying to get the heck out, you know.
But you were able to, like, be safe physically, away from the.
It was mainly for our kids. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give our kids an opportunity to get another inside view of life, you know, and another exposure, and I believe it worked, you know. And just really was involved with. We created our own community up there. Had kind of an underground community that we created, you know, that me and some other folks, you know, parents, and where our kids got to all play together once a month, you know, we gathered and had food and all shared the parents and the families, and kids got to play a lot and stuff. But it was an interesting journey. Learned a lot, really connected with an international community up there, Islamic community, and made some very, very good friends, and then ended up moving back to L.A. when our oldest daughter, come down to San Francisco. She had gotten accepted at, I believe it was Cal State Hayward, was at the time, and then she went on to San Francisco State, and then on out to San Jose and got her master's. But
is this the same daughter that told you to apply when she got down to San Francisco State?
Yes. Yeah. One of my main messengers in my life. I used to say, when she was about four, I'd say, I'm the mommy and you're the little girl. And she'd look at me like, sure. Okay. All right, mommy.
That's funny.
Yeah. But I always had good advice for me, which continues.
Nice. Is this your daughter who's going to be hosting a fundraiser for the people that, the persons that would have their cars torched?
Yeah, that's
in a
the same
rapid.
One.
Oh, okay.
That's the same one, She's always doing things like that, and very inspiring person, very sincere, and
your name is Sydney, right?
Yep, that's Sydney.
Mm-hmm. And you said that she also is the one that remembers the family history.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, she's written a couple of books, and just really documents everything. And I'm like, how do you remember that? She's, Mommy, I remember everything. She remembers things that I don't remember, you know. And so when my mom called one time, my sister had read the book with my mom back in Kansas, and they called and said, oh, my goodness, this is wonderful. And my mother says, how does she remember that stuff? I said, she just does. That's all I can say, you know. So, yeah, she's pretty special, and so are our other kids, you know. Rashida is our daughter. She lived in Jamaica for a year or so, and mm-hmm. now she decided to come back and go to school. So go back to school, and I'm really excited about that, and she is too. And so she's on a journey also in her life, and I'm just so grateful and thankful, and she's really pumped mm-hmm. about it. And then Jaleel lives here in the Bay Area still, and he does I forget what he called it, some type of, anyway, it's like an older rap now, you know, where he's more mellowed back. I really like his music, mm-hmm. so I can stand to hear it, you know. So he's going to be performing also down there at the fundraiser this weekend, as well as my husband, you know, and his group, Hanif and the Sound Voyagers. So everybody's journeying down there this weekend, and for the first time, Jaleel is going to have his dad asked him if they would back him up in a couple of his tunes. So, oh, man. Ah. So everybody's really pumped about this. It's, yes, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, and then Rashida's helping with the fundraiser also. She's involved in a lot of stuff. Matter of fact, she's organized a friend's some big fundraiser in L.A. Tonight. So they're all just doing their thing, and I'm just really proud of them.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. So how does one find out more about the fundraiser, and then how does one get to come to the Sacred Space Spiritual Support Group? Like, what are the parameters around that?
Well, Sacred Space Spiritual Support Group, we gather once a month. It's the third Thursday of the month. And it's at East Bay Meditation Center, which is at 2147 Broadway. It's from 4 to 6 p.m. And it is a fragrance-free environment because, you know, a lot of times we don't realize that a lot of people are really sensitive to all these different fragrances and stuff. And we might say, oh, well, it's all natural or it's essential oil, but some people are really highly sensitive. So it is a fragrance-free environment. And we don't charge a fee, but we do ask for a donation if you can. And but don't let that hold you back, and be nice if you can bring some type of healthy snack, but don't let that hold you back either. We just want the person there mm-hmm. to share their energy so we can learn and grow together. And so that's the thing about Sacred Space.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's for African-American women, right?
Yes, it's for African-American women of all ages.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't turn anybody away. And we do, you know, we are open to African-American men coming also. But if you're not African-American, like I say, we don't turn you away. But that is the focus,
mm-hmm.
is African-American women and men. So it's time for us to just really, you know, take control of our own lives and our own destiny, and do something about our situation, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for the fundraiser on Saturday in Los Angeles,
yes.
What are the details on that?
The details on that is it is oh dear it. Should have had that in front of me here. I do know if they can actually Google my daughter, Sydney Appleseed Miles.com,
mm-hmm.
and then they can pull up all the information. She has her website.
Okay.
And
I'm going to try to do it now.
Okay, thank you.
And hopefully, I haven't talked to Sydney, but hopefully I can have her on the air on Friday still to talk about this fundraiser.
Oh, good, good,
yeah.
Good.
Did you say Sydney Appleseed Miles, M-I-L-E-S?
Yeah, M-Y, I'm sorry.
Oh,
and it's Sydney.
Okay.
It's S-I-D-N-I.
Oh, I spelled it wrong. Okay.
Okay, S-I-D-N-I,
okay.
And then Appleseed, A-P-P-L-E-S-E-E-D.
Okay.
And then M-Y-L-E-S.
Oh, there it is. I found her. Yeah.
Cool.
West
okay.
Hollywood, California Patch.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a really a nice coffee shop there. They've been going to that place for, I don't know, we have ever since we've been going down there for these visits off and on for the last 10, 12 years. And they were just very, very happy to have this event at their place. So it's they're, oh, yeah, come on, do this. So a councilman is backing it up and going to have a charter a bus for a bunch of seniors to come attend, and there's going to be lots of music and food and people coming out and giving donations to help folks to get over the trauma that they've experienced, you know. And there's so much, like I say, energy out there in the street, you know. Just, you can just feel it. So it should be just a good old time. We're just looking forward to it.
Yeah, I found an article in the West Hollywood Patch, and it says that that more than 50 fires were set in Los Angeles, West Hollywood, and Burbank within several nights around New Year's Eve.
Yes.
A path of destruction that left many people without homes. And so one of those victims was Sydney Appleseed Miles, your daughter, who said she found herself temporarily homeless after her home was a target of one of the fires.
Yeah.
And so she's been featured in this newspaper for her poetry, and she decided, quote, to turn lemons into lemonade.
Yeah.
So she's a fundraiser for victims of the arson fires is at Marie, et cetera.
Yes.
C? I don't know how to pronounce it.
I think it's pronounced Sierra, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in Valley Village on Saturday, March 10th from 1 to 5 p.m.
Yes.
And it's going to honor the Los Angeles Fire Department.
Yeah.
And the Los Angeles Police Department.
Yes.
North Hollywood Division, as well as the Piedmont Senior Living Community.
Yes.
Which sounds like a really great event.
Yeah. Well, she said that she wanted to honor the fire department and the sheriff's department, the police department, because they were so really kind to them, because they, like the building that she manages, that's where it was, is like right around the corner from the station, and they insisted, because of fire, that their place started like about 2 o'clock in the morning. And there they were standing out there in their pajamas and all this kind of stuff, just like overwhelmed, you know, like, oh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that they insisted that they go and sit, you know, where it was warm in their station around the corner, and just really was really kind to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so she thought, well, you know, who honors the sheriff or who honors the fire department, you know, but they were really human beings to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wanted to include them in the loop, too.
Right, that's
so
nice.
Yeah.
And then the council person you mentioned, his name is Tom Labange.
Uh-huh.
And he has asked the city to expedite building permits for the victims of the arson fires.
Yes.
And he's going to speak. And then besides your son and your husband, they're going to have DJ, the comedy of Mary Not So Contrary, hip hop artist Jay Lees.
That's Jaleel. That's our
son. Oh, that's your son. Oh, Jaleel.
Yes.
Jaleel. Oh, okay, spelled
Jay
it wrong. And the rock group DC4.
Uh-huh.
And then your daughter's going to also, I guess, share some poetry.
Yes.
And then the person who started the fires, Harry Burkhart, was arrested. He's a German national. He was arrested on January 2nd.
Yeah.
On suspicion of starting the string of arson fires, which terrorized Los Angeles for four nights in a row.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Oh, it was amazing. And matter of fact, I had just got through talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, talked to Naima. That's her oldest daughter.
Okay.
And we talked, you know, like for maybe 20, 30 minutes before that. And then I think Sydney called, and we talked for about 5-10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I mean, it was no more than maybe an hour later.
Oh.
And she goes, Mom, the building is on fire. And as a matter of fact, the fire was right under her bed, because she had a condo, and her balcony was over the carport. And so one of the fires that he actually set four cars in their complex. So she thinks he really planned for them all to go off at one time, which would have really been horrendous. It would have just took everything out.
Like it would have been a bomb.
And a bomb, exactly. Uh-huh. But they didn't go off at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was a fire under her balcony, and then it spread under her bed, actually. She was just, later she realized she got to stay. We all went together and helped them to spend a few days in a hotel because the place was totally smoked out and burned, and it was mm-hmm. it was really bad. So,
yeah.
So anyway, she one of her neighbors, you know, called and said, guess what, Sydney, the fire department had to come back this morning and put out the fire. It wasn't totally out, and it was burning right under your bed, you know. And she says, what? No wonder the floor was hot when I came in there to get the rest of my stuff out of there.
Wow.
So it was pretty close, you know. And
yeah.
Her baby sister, Rashida, was also, she just happened to not be there, you know, at mm-hmm. that time, too. So mm-hmm. she's found herself another location also in L.A. there while she continues with her schooling and stuff. But
yeah.
It's been quite a journey. But, you know, that's the way life is, you know. And nobody said it would be a barrel of laughs, and if they did, they sure did lie, huh?
Right. Yeah. But you know, Sydney has a great mother and father, you know, from all of these, Lola's Light and Sacred Space and Welcome to the Table and.
Yeah.
Compassionate Companions and just sisters
yeah.
started picking it all up. It's like, you know, she's got a great role model there.
Well, thank you. It's hard work, sis. I believe, you know, I always say when I end my journey, when it's time for me to end my journey, and I'm asked, you know, did you do, what did you do? I want to know that I did everything that I felt in my heart that I was supposed to do, that I was
mm-hmm.
moved to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so much of the time we hold back and, no, it's not the right time, it's not enough money, it's not enough this, it's not enough that, let somebody else do it. And then, you know, then we feel really bad about a lot of things. Well, we have enough things that we beat ourselves up about, which we shouldn't, but
mm-hmm.
I just want to feel